people being indifferent to their communication more than people liking or disliking their communication. Indifference is a curse, actually, because if you're indifferent to something, you have not even registered that something is moving in front of your attention span, whether it's in print or video. That is far, far, far worse. And there is no way to judge or quantify indifference either. I mean, people have not seen it, but we seem to be more, I mean, marketers seem to be more affected by how many likes, how many clicks, how many views. Okay, views to go gaya, because most of the platforms just start playing the video automatically and it plays for about 5 seconds and it's counted as one view, even though it's not a view at all. It's just waiting for the video to just end and click that, pause this ad and move on this ad. That's what you're waiting for. But there are shortcuts for views. I think more marketers should be worried about indifference and how to avoid audience indifference.
Deep conversations about what really matters with the best minds in business, startups, sports, music, and many more. This is the Best in Class podcast.
So thanks for making time, Karthik. It's a pleasure to be connected and it's a pleasure to be talking to you. And for those of my listeners who may not know you, Karthik Srinivasan is probably my favorite marketing writer on LinkedIn. I think you have a way of telling very simple, nice stories. And also you have a way of capturing the zeitgeist quite well. Whatever is happening, if I want to know what's happening in the world of marketing before going to Mint or ET or, you know, AFAX, I first come to you. And I always find that your takes are relatable, hilarious, and they may be good read. So I quite enjoy your, so I wanted to tell. So anybody who's listening, who's not following Karthik on LinkedIn, please do. He writes well and you'll always learn a thing or two from him. So that's a quick intro. And also I think you're more known for helping people develop their own personal brands.
Correct.
And you also run a consulting firm or a entrepreneurial journey.
Just me and my GST, that's it, nothing.
Nice. So that was the quick intro, Karthik. Anything I've missed, anything you would want to add?
Nothing, but that's more than enough.
Awesome. The reason why I wanted to chat with you was I feel that, like I said, from a marketing point of view, I always have interesting things to say. And as a marketer myself, I feel that there's a lot to learn from simplifying marketing stories and the way you talk about campaigns or things that brands do. So that was one. Second, I want to learn from you is how has your journey been going from working in a company to going solo?
Yep.
And as a solopreneur, what does that look like and what has been your journey? I want to learn about that. Third, which I believe you have a lot of experience and expertise, is building a personal brand, right? And then we'll talk about some fun things, right? Favorite campaigns, books, and so on. So we'll start from your journey first, Karthik. How did you start into how did you get into marketing? What brought you here? And what has been your marketing learning journey? Let's start from there.
Sure. I came into marketing much later in my career, probably after the first decade plus, because I was primarily in corporate communications and PR, which is, I would probably bucket it under earned marketing or earned communications, not paid at all, basically, because PR, you just pay the agency, you don't pay the media, which whatever appears, I mean, the piece of communication appears. So I've always been in communications more than marketing. It was only in, to some extent, when I joined Edelman as head of digital for India, that was also for digital marketing, not necessarily for real marketing at all. That was that. And then Flipkart, I used to handle PR again. And then I joined OBB as head of social for India, which was again non-marketing, more of social media marketing. So I have to be very fair, I've never been in full-fledged advertising-related marketing at all. But I've always been fascinated about advertising. Right from the days when I was growing up, I was in school, I used to buy A&M magazine, which was called Advertising and Marketing, was a used one. That used to be only print magazine available for marketing and advertising sector in India. This was in the 90s, if I remember right. Shrikant Kandekar used to be one of the editors, and I recently connected with him and told him I used to cycle about 10-15 kilometers to a shop in Coimbatore, very far away. It was the only shop in Coimbatore which used to have latest copies of A&M. buy it and then read it directly and then go. I used to do all those days. So it has always been an interesting thought. And quite a few people in my extended family have been in ad agencies like Lintas, Palkram, Moendav, all of those agencies. So I've always been in the periphery of marketing. It's probably only now when I'm writing about it more often that I'm being seen as somebody from the marketing industry, even though I'm not from the marketing industry at all. I think of myself as being the communications industry more often.
Nice story. And talk about that pivotal moments. What made you fall in love with the craft? What was your first experience of, let's talk about advertising first, right? And yeah, storytelling. Let's start from there.
Yeah. So if I remember right, this was probably in the 90s. I was in a family meeting and one of the people in my family who was, I think he was in Lintas at that time. His name is Chandar. He used to be in Lintas back in the 90s. And I asked him a very stupid question. I asked him a very basic question from marketing, which in hindsight looks stupid. I asked him saying, the first time I see an ad, it runs for 60 seconds. And the next time I see the ad, it runs only for 45 seconds. And the third time I see the ad, it only for 30 seconds. Why do they do this sometimes? And then he took me aside because it was a crowded wedding. He took me aside and patiently explained about media budgets, how clients work, how agencies pitch, the whole hog, basically. Something that was instrumental in me being interested in A&M as a magazine, because he told me that you need to read this magazine to get more information. That is probably the starting point. But then for the next decade and a half, it just percolated in the background because nothing happened after that at all. It was much later that came through. So that I would think would be the starting point.
And any thoughts on how it has evolved? So since then, you know, one magazine and probably two media channels, you know, print and TV, to now proliferation of channels, thousands of ways to reach the customer, fragmented attention. How has the world changed for you? And are you more excited about the way things are going now? Or do you feel that it's tougher to be a marketer?
No, I'm immensely more excited to be in the communication space now, of which marketing is part of. I think the evolution has been from push to pull, basically, in the 25 years since I had the first brainwave and started buying A&M. It used to be that whoever spent more money largely used to get a disproportionate share of people's attention. And every single large campaign in the 80s and 90s, if you think about it, it was constantly bombarded to us using the only channel that was available back then. It was Doordarshan, basically. It was there.
Correct.
If you look at all the Pepsi ad, which when it launched in India, I mean, like all those campaigns like Pepsi, I mean, like, you know, all the campaigns that came through, we spoke about it because we were exposed to it through the only communication channel that we were seeing on TV. That's about it. And obviously it was quite expensive to be placed in the channel, and very few brands had that money and do it, but they also did it for the value that it brings, because people would see that if you're able to place it on Doordarshan, then you are a fairly established company and you should be trustworthy in the kind of opinion that came through. From there, we have come to small DTC brands owning disproportionate share of people's attention and people's discourse online, offline, through just one Instagram ad, which is amazing. That's a very exciting time to be. So which means that how you gain people's attention is limited only by your imagination, not necessarily money alone. Of course, money still matters. Media still matters. You can bombard people even now, but people have the power to be indifferent because they've got 1,000 channels in front of them, not just channels, 1,000 screens and 1,000 everything in front of them. And plus there is sleep. We also need to sleep. We also need to eat. We also need to spend time with our pets and family and everything. So all those compete for attention. I mean, I think there's Netflix, the Reed, everything to that. We don't compete with other channels, we compete with sleep because people need to sleep. So it is tremendously exciting because everything is limited by your imagination, which is a big deal actually.
So do you see there are any brands, maybe examples of brands in India that do this pull-based communication very well? Can you talk about your top three favorites that are doing it really well?
Top two, definitely. Both of them also spend money in mainstream media because Dunzo has TV ads, Dunzo has front page ads, and Times of India, which is quite expensive, although it still happens. Zomato also continues to advertise, obviously. But they have been those two brands that have used digital so well, and they seem to know the pulse of what goes around as a world really well. And they make it a point to immerse themselves into that zeitgeist very, very frequently and more often, literally once a week or once a fortnight or once a month, which keeps the brands in circulation and which literally plays up in small ways. If I'm just thinking between ordering something on Zomato and Swiggy and the price is same, I just feel slightly more happy with Zomato because they made me happy last week for some corny thing that they made. I mean, it's just there is no rational explanation at all. It's just that it's top of mind, basically. And then, that works. And those two brands, I think, have done wonderfully well, actually.
Any brands that have done similarly good stuff in the video space? So they are, I think Dunzo and Zomato are excellent in managing social media and bite size.
Social media space.
Yeah. What comes to mind in a similar vein in video?
Good question. I can't think of anybody specifically who consistently does. I think Swiggy to some extent, actually, because that Swiggy a kind of series which also went beyond Swiggy. A few other brands also started using that until. That's a quite, I think, but that's one off, actually. I won't say that's very often. That's quite one off. But they also done other things, like they have done spoofs of other ads for the Swiggy Instacart. So, I mean, to be very fair, it's not one off either. There is some kind of consistent thought that's going on there, actually. So, I think that would be an interesting brand, but that's largely what I can think. I think Netflix is one that has done extraordinarily well. I mean, of course, they are a video content company, but they don't produce their own ads, obviously. It's a paid agency. But I think almost all of Netflix ads, at the very base, watchable and fun. Whether they agree with them or not, whether it works for me or not is different, but they are all watchable. And I always look forward to what Netflix does in the form of their advertising. So I think Netflix is a very good example, though it's probably a pop-out because they are a content company by nature.
Fair enough. What do marketers in India usually get wrong nowadays?
Good question. So I personally believe, and probably there is a kernel of truth in it also, is that marketers should be more worried about people being indifferent to their communication more than people liking or disliking their communication. Indifference is a curse, actually, because if you're indifferent to something, you have not even registered that something is moving in front of your attention span, whether it's in print or video. That is far, far, far worse. And there is no way to judge or quantify indifference either. I mean, people have not seen it, but we seem to be more, I mean, marketers seem to be more affected by how many likes, how many clicks, how many views. Because most of the platforms just start playing the video automatically and it plays for about 5 seconds and it's counted as one view, even though it's not a view at all. It's just waiting for the video to just end and click that, pause this ad and move on this ad. That's what you're waiting for. But there are shortcuts for views. I think more marketers should be worried about indifference and how to avoid audience indifference. So there are shortcuts to do that. For instance, the Cred series is a great example of literally trolling the audience. We won't talk anything about Cred. We will show the most bizarre stuff on screen and you cannot not watch it. Watch Rahul Dravid go apeshit in the streets of Bangalore. I mean, who cannot not watch it at all? We are having fun watching it. But there is nothing about Cred except download Cred. That's the only thing they have. And Jim Serb's very droll starting point, there is nothing at all. It is just create payodai, and then watch this crowd having fun, kind of. So that's about it. So that's another way to beat indifference, and that's quite, but it's largely without purpose from my point of view, even though Kunal would say, no, there is enough purpose, enough people download our apps, that's what matters. So fine, if it works for them, works for them. I think indifference should be a bigger metric, actually.
Very interesting, Karthik. I think I agree with you. Getting lost in the chaos is a bigger pain than getting noticed or not getting noticed. I think it is more about capturing the imagination and making, I always say this, to my teams, if you make the viewer feel something, you have achieved a big, it's a very big,
that feeling. Yes. It could be any emotion. I mean, including fear for some context, basically any emotion, but happiness will be the best, positive. Reinforcement could be best, but emotion, if you're able to make them feel, job done.
Right. Okay. So slightly switching gears, I want to talk about your writing, right?
Sure.
You write regularly. I think the depth of articles the depth of insights are quite useful. You seem to have a routine and you seem to have a way to churn out good stuff on a regular basis. So talk about your writing process, your what does a day of Karthik look like? And how did that habit or that proficiency come about? That journey to proficiency and then now your routine.
So I've been writing a blog since probably late 2000s actually. And it just started as a hobby because I had something to share and something to share. I don't even care how many people read it. I have something to share. That's what matters. If two people read and gain something from it, go to them. If nobody reads it also, I'm completely okay with it. Because people might read it sometime later when they search for a related topic. And stuff. So it has always been a background effort. And I like writing part more than video or talking part of it. Because it's almost like I'm trying to wrestle with my own mind. When I write a sentence, I first say, do I agree with this sentence? How will I counter this sentence myself if I'm my worst cynic or skeptic? How will I counter this? And that's when the process goes. So I'm basically having conversation with myself when I write. I'm extremely selfish from that point of view. And if somebody gains from it, good enough. If nobody gains from it, I don't care. I just write, I have something. That's about it. That was just a hobby. But before I quit Ogilvy in 2018, it was basically a background 3-year kind of plan that I need to quit at some point and go on my own. But I just put this whole push versus pull that I spoke about earlier in terms of marketing communications with my own self. If I become independent as a consultant, my first priority or assumption was that the work that I would get will not come primarily from people I already know, because that's a very small segment, very, very small segment, and whoever I know mutually over a period of, say, about 2 decades of working, a much larger part of work would come from people I have no clue that, but they seem to think that I exist and I'm supposed to be good at something. That would be where the work will come from. So it was basically a pull exercise, whatever I write, and I wanted to incorporate in my daily life as a habit. Like brushing, sleeping, eating, it should be part of an habit. And then I realized that writing is not easy at all because you need to have topics to write. Whole media organizations have people, hundreds of people to write various stuff on various topics. So that's there. So I prioritized myself thinking, what do I write about? What do I know? Communications is what I know. So I started looking everything around me through the lens of communication, whether it's politics, whether it's media and marketing, whether it's PR, whether it's OTT, whatever it is, from the view of communications as a basic filter to look at. But then to write, I also need to read. So I generally have a basic thumb rule that I need to read 10x more than I write. If I don't do that, I won't fill my own head with perspectives. I need to fill my own head with perspectives and then analyze whether I agree with this. Why don't I agree with this? Okay, if I agree with this, what else can I add? Those are the points. And there is only one outcome that I want from my writing. I want people something that I write about. Just ponder as a new perspective or as a different perspective that they might not have seen through. That's my only objective to write, basically. So even today, my post wasn't Pinboy, which was very well celebrated, but I had a specific disconnect with Pinboy and I wanted to just share that with you. So that was basically the idea. And I've made it into a process, basically as a daily process saying, I can't wait for interesting themes to read to appear suddenly out of serendipity in either print or television or online. I need to build content pipelines myself. So it comes to me whenever I want to seek inspiration or what to write, it comes to me. So I have various content filters and content pipelines built via RSS feed on online readers. It just keeps coming. Whenever I want something to read, I go there and keep reading various stuff. And I don't read very deeply either. I skim through what's going on. And whenever something catches my attention, I go deep reading it. You think, okay, no more. And I mean, the whole internet is like on bottomless pit to know a lot more than you need. So that's how it works. So on any given day, I spend about 3 to 4 hours reading at various points of time, not one sitting, basically small bits. Every time I read something, every time something catches my attention and I have a different perspective or I want to add something, I just make a note on Google Keep and then it just accumulates. So at any given point of time, I have about 50 things to think about, write about, research about. And whenever I want to write, dip into one thing and then start expanding. That's as simple as that.
Very cool. And do you have a specific time in the day that you write? Is there a process?
No, nothing at all. I just write all through the day. Basically, I write one paragraph in the morning and add two more paragraphs. While I'm sleeping, I get some brainwave. Okay, I need to add that video also. It's just an early morning, I add that and then I post it. So, all through the day.
Very cool. How has life as a solopreneur been? Before you took that jump, was it a...
Fantastic, actually.
No, did you?
I now think that I should have taken this plunge much longer, but that's okay. There is a time for it.
That's awesome. Yeah. But how did run me through the decision process? And I'm sure you would have thought about, you know, a salary and money and, you know, long term and so on. So, how did that journey look like?
So, at one point after 2015, 16, 17, I thought I could get any kind of decent job that I want, whether in PR, whether in advertising, whether in marketing or any communication or even .com kind of, because I've been in the client side, I've been in the agency side, I've been in the digital agency, all that. So there is a bit of experience that would keep me in good stead from an interview and joining point of view. That's not a big deal at all. But the kind of work is largely similar to, and there is more operational stuff that is expected out of you after two decades of work experience and managerial stuff than actual thinking and doing stuff, which is very unfortunate generally, but that's probably the state with somebody with two decades of experience. You are expected to manage other people. You are not expected to manage thought process or thinking. Of course, we also do that, but the people management takes a lot more time when you have two decades of experience. Then you are seen as a manager person. You're not seen as an independent contributor. An independent contributor probably are not very respected in India, maybe outside India, or maybe they are probably more respected and valued in the technology space where you become a PhD and then become a very thoughtful contributor kind of thing. But probably if I'm in a hardcore creative space, maybe that would be valued more, but I'm not a creative person from a hands-on creative people. I'm just a thinking person is what I think about, not a creative person. So I found it as a black hole that I don't want to get into again. Just keep pulling that. I mean, it's very easy to get that. And it pays very, very well, more than enough basically. But at the same thing, doing again and again. So I thought, what if I just get off myself from this rat race and try something on my own? For one, I don't need to travel to work every day, which is a very, very big deal. I used to spend about 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the evening, driving from Sarjapur Road to Whitefield to Ogilvy and back. It was mind-numbing when you are trying to drive yourself. So I used to keep company with audiobooks, but that's no company at all, hardly. With the traffic, it's just terrible back then. So I thought I need to do that at some point. And the first 1 year was a struggle because there are no clients, or there are very few clients. The people, immediate people you know, kind of work that comes in. But then things change and word spread because I used to write every day. That was my only advertisement for brand me, basically. And that spreads. The more interesting things I write, more people literally start a message on LinkedIn saying, hey, I read the post from you in April. We want to do a workshop in our company. What do we need to do it? And I started doing it. I had no clue how to charge for my time for workshops or consulting. I learned it from others and I start charging very low. And then now I charge much later, more to say no to work than to do anything. So it has been a very fruitful journey. And as I said, I probably should have done it earlier, but there is probably some God there who's saying this is the time for doing things. So take it easy. Everything is good.
So what is your... What does the P&L of brand Karthik look like?
It's looking more than healthy.
No, what I meant was, is it mainly consulting gigs? Is it mainly speaking engagements? Is it writing? Like what brings you?
It's both consulting and workshops. It's actually corporate workshops that bring more work and more money. I do at least about one or two workshops a month. And there is a lot of preparation because most are customized workshop or whatever thing. For some reason, many marketing team heads come to me and said, we are thinking in the same direction. We want to break the thinking and make people think in different directions, creatively. And I actually look at their industry sector and what has happened more creatively in their industry sector. And then outside the sector, what is happening creatively, just to break the flow of creativity and thought process. So that seems to be coming a lot. And then personal branding workshops happen much, much frequently these days. Those keep me very busy. Consulting keeps me on a different layer of busyness, basically, because it's more focused thinking for a brand, a problem, a challenge. And that's something that I used to do in agency. So I don't, but can use.
Got it. Let's talk about the personal branding side. How did that happen? Right. It is related to marketing, but not so related to marketing. And that became the thing that you wrote your book about. So tell me more about that journey. And also, why this topic? You could have picked so many topics in marketing, right? It could be sectors. It could be about writing. It could be about creativity. So many other things that could have become the core of that project. But you chose personal branding. So why that choice and how did that evolve?
To some extent, when I quit, in my mind, I was thinking I am literally putting my own personal brand that I built into the market. Whether it will work or not is something that I have no clue about. It has worked, that worked, but that was what I was trying to do. And I thought I should write a book on it because more people should gain from it. Because in India, we always been told, never talk about your work. Your work should talk about you. And that's right in Bhagavad Gita itself for me. Just don't talk about your work at all. People should talk about your work. Your work should talk about your work. That's not true at all. You need, because we are in a very crowded, busy, noisy ecosystem atmosphere. If you don't talk about your work, who else will is the point. Of course, your mother will talk about your work, but that's not enough at all. Because the audience that you talk about is not very relevant to you or your business that's coming in. So I thought personal branding is a useful topic to people, more like, say, coaching or mentorship, but with a social media touch where everybody is on social media. Because earlier, before the internet, personal branding meant joining Toastmasters club, going for offline meetings, going for events and connecting. It was basically networking was personal branding back then. But now with the internet, you have the power to draw attention based only on your views. If you do it consistently, if you do it once every year, it's not going to come to you. Or if you write one article in Economic Times brand equity, that's not going to happen either. The consistency matters more than one brainwave or one thought you had. The consistency for that. And for consistency, you need to put it into a rigor and a habit and a practice. And almost like an everyday part of your job, which most people don't do. Because I still see many people on LinkedIn very tentatively trying something. And they judge their effort based on the likes and comments they get. And if they don't seem to get the required number in their head, they get very disheartened and stop doing it completely. But persistence is what matters. I mean, doing it every day, showing up every day is more important than showing up once every year or just doing something extraordinarily once every day. You just need to do better than yesterday. That's what it's just like health, our physical health. I mean, the health is basically two things, what goes in and what goes out. That's about it. You choose what you eat, how you eat, how much you eat, and then how much you burn is what literally helps us. Personal branding is exactly the same. What you read and what you share, basically. So how much you read, how much you share, how much you're assimilating inside your brain and thought, and then how much you share qualitatively, purposefully. That's basically personal branding. So I thought not much was being said or written about personal branding from a social media point of view. There is a whole lot of ecosystem around being an influencer, which is having a rate card, charging per post kind of thing. My attempt was not in influencer mode at all. I don't have a rate card for anything. I don't post anything for any brand, no paid content at all. Zero paid content on any platforms. I just say no to it because that's not my monetization model. My monetization model is getting paying clients, not for what I write, but what I can bring to them after I finish writing. That's the idea. But which is not to say that the influencer model is wrong. That's a very different model altogether. But for the normal people like you and me who are not influencers who can monetize what we write in terms of content, there has to be a way to make people associate your name with a topic or a select set of topics. If that happens, that is your pull communication. So whenever people think of, I want to get some kind of point of view on that topic, and people say, okay, he seems to be the best person to find a topic. It can be anything. It can be gardening, it can be driving, it can be car, stamp collecting, marketing, anything, any kind of topic. You just need to be consistent. That's about it. I'm sure you know enough. I mean, for instance, if I ask you, out of the people that you follow online, do you know somebody who is very interested in pet, like dog? I'm sure you'll be able to think of at least one person. And if I ask you saying somebody who's interested in running very, very often and the point of, I want to ask more about running and I'm going to start I'm sure you would say somebody based on who you read more often. That happened literally unconsciously for them, because they're passionate about pets, passionate about running. So they add their point of view again and again on the topic again. I just do it from a communications point of view. The difference is consistency. And my whole book and whole effort is to build that habit and consistency more than just doing it once in a while, like a brain stroke that happened. How to build that consistency and how to put yourself in a place that you can be consistent. When you say consistency, not even the daily consistency. Weekly one is good enough, but the amount of thought that goes into creating something, putting it forward, and what is the background work that people don't even think about it. They just think saying, okay, Friday, mujhe kuch likhna hai, LinkedIn pe aaj kya likho, and they wake up on Friday morning and start thinking, aaj kya likho, and then something. But is there a purpose to it? I have no clue. Maybe it works for them, maybe it doesn't work, because I see some bizarre things on LinkedIn getting 1 million likes and everything, just one line or one poem getting. So anything could work. My objective is to make it purposeful for people, make them think on some lines. It's so bad, they feel like they have gained something from it, kind of stuff. How to emulate that model is what I teach in personal branding. It seems to work for people because it works for me wonderfully. Because when I stand in front of them and try to talk, they see my own self gaining from it and then say, okay, this guy starts laughing at least because it has worked for him. That's why he's saying, that's what I want to do.
Understood. Very, very helpful, Karthik. Thanks for sharing that. And this journey that you have started, is it more workshop-based teaching? Is it online cohort teaching? Is it videos that are pre-recorded? How does it work? How does this format work?
Got it. It is workshop-based coaching or teaching, basically. It's not pre-recorded videos. I've not come into pre-recorded videos as a delivery model yet. I'm still on the live interaction model thinking. And I've said no to quite a few people who wanted the pre-recorded model. I'd probably come to it eventually. I just want to maintain the sanctity of live recording at this point, both from a monetization point of view and both from my own time point of view, what I can afford to that at this point. And I still do only corporate engagements. I still haven't considered a retail kind of model where I gather a random set of 20, 25 people in an online space or an offline space, and then do it over a period of time, because way too much effort in terms of coordination and the modalities from my side. I don't want to waste my time on that at this point, at least. So with corporate, it's much easier because I offer it to the CXOs of a company, and I just need to deal with one learning and development professional or one HR head, and it just works much better from there. So that's how it works for me.
God. I'm going to loop back to marketing, Karthik, if I may, right? There are two questions that all marketers face at any senior level, and that is long format versus short format storytelling. And the second is branding versus performance, right?
Right.
If I were to divide these into like temporal sections, it would be one is more longer term, taking care of longer term health kind of a thing, and other is delivering the numbers here and now.
Correct.
And this tends to be a dilemma that most of any significant brand that is deciding to spend and at the same time grow revenue or users,
correct,
always has this, you know, push and pull.
Right?
I have spoken to a few of my friends, peers who have been able to manage that decently well, I would say. And the answer I hear is, the brand storytelling has to do such a good job of organic intent that it also contributes to the here and now. Right? That's the one answer I've consistently heard, and I've experienced it in my life as well, right? Whenever we do a brand campaign. But would love to hear your thoughts on this long form versus short form and branding versus performance.
There is nothing specifically between long and short from a choice point of view. You probably need to do both. It's almost like we also enjoying a 7-course meal and a wedding on a big banana leaf, which we thoroughly enjoy, and also like a Maggi kind of stuff. It depends on the mood. We consume both kind of content. We also look at ads. We also look at Netflix binge watch. We also do that basically. So we do everything. We read short form content online, we read books, everything happens. It depends on the mode, time, place, context, situation, basically. So for a brand also to build an emotional connection with a brand or the brand's product or the brand context, you need to tell interesting stories which can evoke a reaction in people, evoke a feeling in people that's there. But you need to sell products, you need to sell services. So you need to have the shorter versions of sell-related communication also, which dip into that emotion that was gained once and then now make something saying, okay, now that you are walking through an aisle in the department store, buy our copy because you remember you enjoyed that nice heartwarming ad that you saw 2 weeks ago. Kind of. So both needs to happen at some point in the journey of the brand, and it needs to happen consistently, like a cycle. You build the brand, you gain from it, you build brand, you gain from it quickly. That has to happen. So it has to perform basically. But the one thing that I would probably say is don't expect a brand building effort to lead you to actual conversion and performance, because the intent of that is very different. The intent of that is seeding a positive appeal of the brand in people's mind. And that cannot be quantified through app downloads or moving product off the aisle basically at all. You can't do that. And it's a bit unfair to do it. If it works, good enough. But it's unfair to expect that from that. For moving products off the aisle, you need to think differently. It's more immediate. It's more contextual from that point of view. It needs to push people towards the direction. Can you combine both? Of course, you can combine both in very creative ways. So that would be very interesting. But that's a very creative challenge and a very nice challenge to appeal to. But it happens very rarely. But if you can pull that off, wonderful. But the point is, needs to be done as a cycle. And you can't just expect one big brand building campaign to work for the next 1 year, 2 year at all. You need to keep at it again and again, like I said.
Makes sense, yeah, I think. Let's do some quick questions. So your most popular article from last year.
last year was the Tanishq issue last year?
I think so. Yeah.
I think so. That would have been the one, literally the one, because I took a contra view saying it was a fantastic ad. There was nothing wrong with the ad. There is no point in even outraging over the ad. And no wonder it went place.
Your favorite campaign from the last 12 months?
Wow.
Video campaign. Let me be a little more specific.
I see so many campaigns. Very difficult.
But you mentioned a few. Mention, let's say, top three.
Yeah, go. The top, I would probably say, I mean, I just had so much fun watching it. I wrote about it recently also. It was from the UK. It was a campaign for a private train company called Avanti West Coast, I think. It had the imagery of a turtle in roller skates. That's the dream. And you cannot not want to know why is a turtle in roller skates, what's happening, and what has it got to do with train. It was brilliant. I just had so much fun watching it again and again. And I watched it again and again, actually. That would be really number one, all top.
Yeah. Okay, okay. Very cool. Okay. Number two and three.
I need to really think because nothing comes to my mind. Number two would be the Cadbury Dairy Milk redux of the older ad, 80s ad, which they did with the simple twist. And it was like a twist that was hiding in plain sight for anybody and everybody. But one Ogilvy person, probably a very junior person, to even give that idea up the hierarchy, and then everybody thought, oh, why haven't they done it at all so far? And they just went with it. So that was brilliant. And I would say the Rahul Dravid cred ad is a master stroke because it is something that nobody would have expected out of their deepest minds to happen at all. And credit to them for pulling it off in style, complete style, actually.
Agree. All three are my personal favorites as well. So good ones. Any favorite book from the last 12 months?
Quite a few, actually, because I keep reading a lot of books. The most recent one I read, which made me think a lot, it's not a very new book. It was an old, I think it's 2016 book, which I read only last year. It's called Children of Time. It's a science fiction book by Adrian Tchaikovsky. Extremely fascinating premise of, this is something that in a couple of movies. The premise is that humanity is ended and they have gone on an Ark kind of ship. It's almost like a Noah's Ark, but in a ship format, which flies off. And then they are able to repopulate other worlds which seem to have Earth-like atmosphere. Unfortunately, due to a quirk or an accident, they are able to make intelligent spiders instead of humans. So there are humans, there are spiders, and spiders who have human-like intelligence, and they have sapience and sentience. And they think differently. They don't think like humans, they don't speak like humans at all, but they need to communicate and how the communication happens. This is the perennial thought that goes into my, because I'm a big fan of science fiction. And one of the earlier books that I have read, it's by a writer named Sue, I forgot the full name, but the book is called Sparrow. The Sparrow's premise is that in the near future, the church is the most wealthy organization that can send humans to space, unfortunately, not countries, not NASA, everybody, just church, unfortunately, that sense. So they decide to send a couple of people from the church to another planet where they find life, intelligent life, and habitable life, basically habitable atmosphere. And what happens is a story. And I could think of a parallel based on one quirk in that story where, just consider the scenario. Suppose if we find intelligent species from another planet, and they are more attuned to canine sense than human sense, that is dog sense. So when they come here, the first set of beings that they would be able to communicate to directly would be our dog, not us. And when they ask the dog, saying, we are going to exterminate all these humans from this planet because there's no point, we need to take over this planet. And do you have any favorite humans that you want to keep as not killing and you want to retain them because they've been good to you? The dogs will say, yeah, yeah, my owner, my master. They've been good to me. And the canine aliens, the last thing, okay, what do you want them to do? Saying, he has treated me very well, and I would probably give him a kennel and put him on a leash and give him food, because that's what's happening to me. Just imagine the twist, basically, because for dogs, a good life is great food, leash, walk, dog poo, and then kennel. That's about good life, basically. And they would give it to us thinking, I mean, like honestly thinking that this is good to me, so it must be good to my master too. And from our perspective, that is hell, basically, because we are being jailed inside a kennel. But for them, this is great. So there's a perspective, the whole thing shifts, basically. And that keeps me very, very interested to think how other species think and what is their thought process, because we seem to be completely mired in our own thinking we own this planet, which we don't at all. It's quite stupid, actually.
Amazing. I'm a huge fan of science fiction as well. And these are two books I have not read, so I'll definitely check them out.
Both. It's called Sparrow and Children of Man.
Got it. I have two recommendations for you. So my favorite science fiction writer of, I would say, the last decade has been this guy called Ted Chiang.
Of course, Ted Chiang. I read all his books. All, every single book.
Cool,
totally.
Cool.
He's phenomenally interesting. Yeah.
I can't recommend those books enough, right? Both Story of Our Lives and Exhalation. Yeah,
wonderful. Exhalation, it's phenomenal. I've read most stories again and again because there's so much to read in them. Actually, so much to get from them.
Also, he's a master of my language.
There's one story about how humans started putting their thoughts into paper.
Correct.
And how does it matter? And the amount of thinking that has gone into the book, is that story is mind-blowing, because we have not thought through transferring our thoughts into paper make such a big difference, because before paper arrived, it was storytelling that was the only thing. And when people died, it went off, basically. And then it changed, which is called Chinese whispers now. So much thought has gone into it.
And the fact that he's able to almost immerse himself into that world so deeply and write about a merchant in ancient
Mesopotamia. I know the story.
And also transport himself to the future, you know, where something unbelievable is happening.
Complete future, exactly. I wish they made series of that for, I mean like on Netflix or something. They would make phenomenal.
I agree. I mean, just that one short story that got made into a movie did so well.
Correct. Right? Exactly.
Arrival was based on one story in that book.
Exactly. And it was a phenomenal book. It was exactly the same thing that I'm talking about. The perspective is only human that we think of. We don't think of non-human because we cannot at all.
Last few questions, Karthik.
Just one question. You mentioned two books. What's the other book?
So, Exhalation was one. The other one is Story of Your Lives.
Oh, Story of Your
Lives. Yeah. The first one is the collection of the same writer.
Yeah, yeah. That's
right. Yeah. Usually in science fiction, I go back to classics. So, I read Asimov a lot.
I'm actually rereading Foundation now. I'm on book 4 now. But to be fair, I'm not reading, I'm listening, because I'm a big audio fan. I listen. Nice. So I'm reading it for the third time, listening for the third time. Nice. I just finished Foundation and Earth last week, and I'm starting the next one, basically. I mean, I think the Foundation's Edge or one of... No, I think Foundation's Edge is out. I'm on Foundation's Edge. And I can't recommend it to, I mean, like, enough to anybody at all. It's probably the first thing they should start. So much of thinking.
Correct. Awesome, yeah. That was very nice to revisit these stories. Happy to chat about them. Last two questions I wanted to ask you. One was, any personalities anywhere on social media that you really like and who write regularly and you find them very interesting and you want to follow them?
There are a lot of them, and I have put one full chapter in my book, that's Anand Mahindra, but that's more from a corporate personality using personal brand in a very powerful way perspective. I don't agree with a lot of he writes, but the fact that he puts effort in sharing a point of view consistently over a period of time, and just Twitter is his platform. He doesn't care about LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram at all, just that. Is quite inspiring, the kind of rigor that goes into why he does what he does. So that's quite inspiring. There are a lot of people that I really look up to from a reading point of view. For instance, Srikanth Kamilakhandekar on LinkedIn, whenever he writes, it's very thought through. There is a lot of thinking that has gone into his writing. I look up to his writing a lot. Those two come to my mind quickly. There are other, not probably that consistent. Occasionally one works, occasionally one doesn't work. That happens quite a lot. But these two from a consistency point.
Got it. And if you have a billboard in the middle of the busiest intersection in the world, okay, one sentence you can put out and everybody will get to know it. What would that one sentence?
I would say world peace right now, because we are in a total state of flux. We thought COVID was the worst in the world, but now there is a war, which is probably 100 times worse than COVID. And I really think the world needs some peace now, because we were in the longest period of peace till COVID arrived. I mean, largely peaceful, even though there were countries that were in severe strife. But now everything is bubbling to a corner that I think only an alien coming us will probably bring us together as humans. I thought COVID would do that. When COVID came, I thought we will come together as humans and not as Indians, US, or Blacks and Muslims and humans. But it probably amplified all of our differences, COVID, which was terrible, actually. I thought war will do it, but war is making things worse. So I'm really hoping that we can look beyond our differences and look at what unites us more often. I think peace probably would need a very important chance right now. That would be my billboard. Nothing personal, nothing selfish at all.
On that note, Karthik, on that very optimistic, hopeful note, I thank you. And this was a wonderful conversation. I enjoyed it. And hopefully you had a good time as well. Thanks for making time. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.